from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For all the months of warm-up and maneuvering already behind us, Labor Day marks the real start of the presidential campaign season. This year, Labor Day came with 9 Democratic hopefuls. Tonight, they debate. But in early primary season ballot states like Iowa and New Hampshire, the fight is well underway, and the candidates are unmissable on the hustings.
The way to beat George Bush is to stand up for what Democrats believe, stand up and be proud to be Democrats. And if you make me the Democratic nominee, I'll promise you one thing. If you make me the Democratic nominee, I'll make you proud to vote Democrat in this country again.
My economic plan sets this goal: to get back George Bush's 3 million jobs in my first 500 days as president, and we can do it.
This is a moral issue. It is immoral to have anybody in this country without health insurance. And when I'm president, we're going to solve that problem once and for all.
Dean Carey Gephardt there. It's a battle for hearts, minds, and recognition in a crowded Democratic field. Polls show most Americans are unable to name a single candidate on the roster. But in Iowa and New Hampshire, the would-be challengers to George Bush are well into showing their colors, becoming intimately well-known. Tonight on Point, inside the campaigns, in the early battleground states, Democrats off the blocks in the race for the presidency. We begin in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where the season's first big debate among Democratic candidates will take place later tonight. The debate setting and simultaneous broadcast in Spanish are significant in the Democratic strategy to court Hispanic voters. Jake Schlesinger is political reporter for the Wall Street Journal. I asked him what's on the agenda tonight in Albuquerque.
The first official agenda is just to kick off the campaign in high gear. There's been a lot of what people call the preseason going on, and this is the first of 6 official debates plus another unofficial debate that are going to be taking place to really get national television attention on these candidates debating the issues. The second official agenda, and what Democratic National Committee Chairman Terry McAuliffe and New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson were stressing today before the debate, is to also put the Hispanic community, the Latino community, on the Democratic agenda. For symbolic purposes, they chose to have this first debate in New Mexico, where the governor, Bill Richardson, is Hispanic, and it's co-sponsored by the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. It's a crucial population that the Democrats say they need to dominate, and one where President Bush thinks he can make inroads.
Governor Richardson says he expects there to be fireworks. Howard Dean is the new and increasing front runner. Is he expected to be a big target?
I think it would be very tempting to make him a target, and a lot of the other candidates, particularly Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts, who used to be the front runner, all of these designations, mind you, still months before any votes take place, and Richard Gephardt, the representative from Missouri, who wants to be the front runner, and particularly have a lot to lose from Dean Surge, and I think it's tempting for them to go after him. The trade-off, of course, that they face is whether they diminish themselves by doing that, and that's the calculation they're going through right now.
Dean and Lieberman got in last night, and they've been having some events. I understand Dean had a coffee house meeting with some New Mexico supporters there. Can you feel, just in the brief time you've been there in Albuquerque, Jake, the race in the air at all, or is it still all inside the bubble of televised debate?
There's a lot of bubble feeling. I don't think that the average New Mexican on the street feels it. There have been a number of staged events. The campus itself will certainly have that feeling. And Governor Dean is having a rally. He's the only one who's expected to have a big rally, which I guess is typical of the campaign so far. He had a big fundraiser meetup last night in Santa Fe as well. Although what's interesting, I've talked to some of the folks who were there, is that furthering part of what has been the rap on his campaign so far is that even in New Mexico, which is 40% Hispanic, that the crowd was almost entirely white.
What about New Mexico's role? They've moved up their own caucus or vote there. Does New Mexico really expect to be a bellwether state of some kind, or is this just trying to raise a profile without impact?
Well, it's a combination of things. But the key is, as DNC Chairman McAuliffe keeps pointing out, in the past there was always a 6-week gap between Iowa and New Hampshire and anybody else. Now New Mexico is part of a group of states that's having a vote on February 3rd, just 1 week after New Hampshire. And the folks I've talked to in New Mexico say you already see the difference, that you are seeing all the candidates come here not just for this debate, but on a regular basis, which is something they have not seen before. So certainly within the nomination process is important. And it's important, like a lot of states now, in the national election, New Mexico was carried by Gore by less than 400 votes. And in an electoral college where both parties are separated by a matter of votes, New Mexico really could among with a handful of other states, decide the presidential election.
What's the setting for the debate tonight? What's the format?
It is going to be at the University of New Mexico. What's interesting, again, further on this the theme, the Democrats aren't being too subtle about courting the Hispanics, is that it will be broadcast bilingually. Some of the questions will be asked in Spanish. The candidates will be asked to talk about issues of the day. There'll be some interaction, but Tom, it's been difficult in all the debates so far and going forward is that with nine candidates, each guaranteed equal time, there's a limit to how much interaction you can really get.
And what about that? All nine will be there tonight. There may be a tenth soon if General Wesley Clark enters the race. Are they obligated to keep everybody in these in this series of debates all the way through?
They are committed, in fact, to keeping them in the debates. And as Terry McAuliffe said today, he's holding a 10th podium open for Wesley Clark should he enter before the next debate on September 25th. And he said he thinks there's a 95% chance he will. I think the hope, though, Tom, is that the field will narrow fairly quickly. They're talking about having a nominee in hand by mid-March, which suggests that certainly a lot of people are going to drop out well before that, some perhaps even before the first vote is cast.
And what about Dean in New Mexico? He's raised a lot of support among an anti-war crowd, among a kind of true blue progressive Democrat crowd. Does that resonate in New Mexico?
That's actually a really good question. There are a lot of veterans here. It's a heavily military-influenced state, a lot of people who did support the war and who had their kids going to war. So I think there's been greater ambivalence here than elsewhere about the anti-war message. And also, as we talked about earlier, New Mexico is largely Hispanic, and Dean's appeal so far has been largely white. His home base of Vermont is largely white. But New Mexico is one of these interesting broadening-out states for Howard Dean. His early focus was on Iowa and New Hampshire, but now that he has the money and support, he really is reaching out. He's made some important Hispanic hires in the state, and he is making a big effort. It's early yet, so it's hard to say, but he certainly is reaching out here.
Jake Schlesinger, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Jake Schlesinger is political reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Democrats, John Edwards, Howard Dean, Bob Graham, Dick Gephardt, John Kerry, Dennis Kucinich, Joe Lieberman, Carol Moseley-Braun, and Al Sharpton have all thrown their hats in the ring. General Wesley Clark may soon follow. What do you really know about the candidates? With two news magazine covers in the same week and money pouring in, Dean has all the buzz, but it's still early. Gephardt is counting on a win in Iowa and Kerry in New Hampshire. But who has the staying power for the campaign marathon? Tonight, we get a fresh snapshot from Iowa and New Hampshire of the campaigns and characters unfolding there. What messages, what impressions are getting through to you? If you were voting in New Hampshire or Iowa, who would have your vote now and why? Do you see a potential winner of the White House in this crew? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. Talk. Joining me now from Des Moines, Iowa, is David Yepsen, political columnist at the Des Moines Register. Good evening and welcome, David Yepsen.
Good evening.
Great to have you. And with us from New Hampshire is Kevin Landrigan, political reporter for the Nashua Telegraph in Nashua, New Hampshire. Good evening, Kevin Landrigan.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Thanks for being with us. Also with us tonight from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, and hello to our guests.
David Yepsen, take us right into Iowa. We've been hearing a lot about Dean on the move. How do you see the campaign shaping up there right now? Who's moved to the front of the pack? Is there a cluster at the front? Is it Dean way out in front?
Dean is narrowly in front of Richard Gephardt here. Dick Gephardt won Iowa in 1988. He has spent a lot of time here since that time and is really the favorite of a lot of the rank-and-file union activists who show up at caucuses. I think one of the things I think it's important for us all to remember as we look at Iowa versus New Hampshire is mm-hmm. that the Iowa process is a caucus process.
Right.
And that means you go into somebody's living room or into a church basement and you do your thing publicly. All the Dean people get in one corner and the Gephardt people get in another corner. And what that does is it places a premium on organizing and on standing up publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in a state like New Hampshire, the primary, you do all this in the privacy of a voting booth. And so I think Gephardt has an advantage here with his union endorsements. He's got the endorsements of 11 or 12 international unions. They have about 30,000 members in Iowa. They're going to be about 80 to 90,000 people who show up on caucus night. I mean, if Gephardt just gets the union membership and the spouses of the unions that have endorsed him, he wins handily.
So you've got Gephardt there and Dean almost neck and neck, Dean ahead maybe by a sliver in Iowa. Who's right behind, or are there candidates right behind?
Well, there aren't. I mean, John Kerry was near the top of the pack. He's slipped down some now. There's a lot of questions about the way he's running his campaign. Joe Lieberman is also sort of hung in there at about fourth place. John Edwards has been a real surprise, too. He spent a lot of time here, but so far is not moving any poll numbers. I don't think Senator Edwards really recovered from that poor performance he had on Meet the Press with Tim Russert sometime back.
Mm-hmm.
I think it sort of left him with the label that he might be a little bit too inexperienced and unseasoned. And so the real story out of here has been Howard Dean. He's spent a lot of time here. He's caught up with Dick Gephardt in Iowa. He leads him in a couple of polls by a few points. And so the dynamic is that we're looking at here right now is if Howard Dean beats Dick Gephardt in Iowa, that really – I think, ends Gephardt's candidacy. And then you go on into New Hampshire, where history teaches us that a win in Iowa is always worth 5 to 10 points in New Hampshire. You just get a week of media buzz and attention. And he's in a position to dispatch Kerry there. I mean, you've already seen a poll where he leads John Kerry by double digits in New Hampshire. So if Howard Dean wins Iowa and wins New Hampshire, this thing may be over with.
He's going to have a big, big roll on. Kevin Landrigan, how about that? We've seen this latest poll. It wasn't so long ago that Dean and Kerry were something like neck and neck there. Now we see a poll showing Dean with a 21-point lead over Kerry. Does that sound right to you? And what is resonating? What's working for Dr. Dean in New Hampshire?
Tom, it seems that poll seems a little bit out of kilter with several polls we've seen here in the last couple of weeks showing, but all of them do show a Dean surge and some of them more in a 7 to 10 point variety.
Mm-hmm.
Kerry's campaign is dismissing that poll as well and doesn't believe it's reflective of what's on the ground. But there's no question that Howard Dean's the hottest thing to come to New Hampshire since NASCAR races did 4 or 5 years ago. And it's ironic, too, because as David alluded to, I mean, this is a guy who sort of was the tomboy next door, you know.
In Vermont, that is.
And governor of Vermont and a hardworking governor. And when I say the tomboy next door, I mean, you know, if you're a JV football player and all you know about the girl next door, she always wears the hair under her cap and she can catch a ball over the middle and throw a pretty good baseball herself. And then a few years later, it turns out she's the junior prom queen, and you ask, who's that pretty girl?
Vavoom.
And it happens to be Harriet Dean. And that's the experience a lot of political smart alecks in New Hampshire, who all had John Kerry as the front runner in New Hampshire, as the neighboring senator, as someone who spent the last 6 or 7 years mining a future presidential campaign up here. But Howard Dean's done it the old-fashioned way, by hard work and sweat and by literally living in New Hampshire for the last 15 months.
Jack Beattie, you're right up there in New Hampshire also. What's the string that Howard Dean is plucking up there?
Well, issues matter. And I think if we put this in context of the 2002 election, we can see something. I mean, you know, those last elections were not fought on issues. The Democrats caved on the war. And in fact, their attitude during the debate over the war resolution was, oh, let's get this over with quickly so we can go to the public and talk about Medicare and Social Security. Well, I think Democrats all over the country and even independents who were skeptical about the war felt cheated that there was no effort to stand up to Bush on the war and on the political use of the war, you know, getting the vote before the election and so on. And into this vacuum comes one man who stands up and says, I don't go along with this. This war is unnecessary. We don't need to, you know, and we should sound like Democrats and stand up and say something. And boy, did he strike a vein. And I think that vein was opened with that punt that the Democrats effectively did on that election.
Before the midterm debacle, David Yepsen and Kevin Landrigan, we want to come back and get some up-close and personal stories from what you've seen of these candidates on the stump. We're talking tonight about Democrats at the real starting line of the presidential campaign, The View from Iowa and New Hampshire. You can join the conversation. What messages, what impressions are getting through to you? Who's getting your attention and why? And if you're going to be voting in New Hampshire or Iowa, where's your vote headed? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking tonight at Democrats at the real starting line of the presidential campaign, The View from Iowa and New Hampshire. We're joined tonight from Des Moines, Iowa, by David Yepsen, political editor of the Des Moines Register. He's covered campaigns there since 1975. And from Concord, New Hampshire, Kevin Landrigan, political reporter with the National Nashua Telegraph. He's covered campaigns since 1980. You can join the conversation tonight. Who's got what it takes to take on George Bush? And is this going to be a different kind of presidential contest? Are we moving away from the center and rallying around the political poles here? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. With $5 million already spent on his campaign, Massachusetts Senator John Kerry yesterday launched his television advertising campaign in Iowa.
3 million jobs lost, too many of them in the heartland. That is an astonishing failure. If I am president, I will roll back the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy so we can invest in education, health care, and the skills of our workers. We need to be on the side of America's middle class, and a tax cut for them is the right way to strengthen our economy. I'm John Kerry, and I approve this message.
John Kerry's new TV ads in Iowa. He's a little hoarse there and a little behind. David Yepsen, take us into some scenes here. You've seen all the candidates. You've seen Kerry, Dean, Gephardt. What's working? What's not? Take us to a campaign site where you've seen the magic that's there or not there.
Well, I think Jack Beatty hit on something when he talked about how Howard Dean has given voice to the anger that Democrats feel. You know, Democrats, many of them do not believe that Bush is a legitimate president. They're furious over the way he was chosen. They're angry about this war. And Howard Dean really gave voice to that. And the other, the Washington Democrats, were voting for the war. They were voting for the Patriot Act. And you know, really hurt their credibility with these activists. So Howard Dean gave voice to a lot of that. He also spent an incredible amount of time here. I mean, Senator Kerry was sort of gone from the scene. He was doing the worst thing you can do in politics, and that's sit on a lead.
But when you're at a Dean campaign event in Iowa, can you feel that old-time religion? And is that going to carry? I mean, what does it feel like? And does it feel like something that doesn't look so good after the primaries when you head out to the big American electorate?
Well, Tom, I think, yes, you can feel it. And I'll give you one example. I went to a Dean event a few weeks ago, and I didn't know two-thirds of the people there. I've covered politics in this state for 30 years, mm-hmm. and I usually know most of the players, most of the folks, the activists in both parties. And Dean was attracting an awful lot of new people to this. And that has always been, in my experience in politics, that winners of caucuses, whether it's anti-war people in Vietnam, whether it was Pat Robertson and the evangelicals, if you have the ability to bring new people out, you're going to do well. And Howard Dean is doing that in this state.
And Kevin Landrigan in New Hampshire, take us inside. What have you seen? What telling moment? What telling circumstance where you've seen these candidates, Dean or others?
Well, as far as Dean, the best thing you can do as a candidate on the ground as well as on election day is to outperform expectations, and that's what we continue to see with Howard Dean. There was he had a house party last weekend in a town named Walpole, which is northwest of Keene. It's a very small town that sits in the middle of a two-lane road that runs through town. And a state representative named Jack Pratt decided to host a house party for him, and the local police chief there, who sort of your quintessential sort of overweight town police chief who couldn't find anybody else to work Labor Day weekend, so he had to do all the crowd control, asked Jack, so how many are we looking at here in this small town of ours? And he said, oh, a couple of hundred cars. Don't worry about it. That should be it. We haven't done a big mailing or anything. Well, to make a long story short, 1,200 people showed up at Jack Pratt's house.
It's a crowded living room.
And that police chief, all sweaty and tired about 4.5 hours later, since Howard Dean was 45 minutes late for his own party since he got stuck in his own traffic jam on that two-lane road, the chief comes up comes up to Pratt and says, 200 cars my foot, and starts laughing. And
there's a surplus of riches in a telling moment. Kevin Landrigan, David Yipsen, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Martha Brandt. She's national correspondent for Newsweek magazine, a veteran campaign reporter, covered the Dole campaign in 96, the Bush campaign in 2000, former White House correspondent. Good evening and welcome, Martha Brandt.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you with us. Martha, you're watching all this from Washington. You hear that Dean buzz from both these states, though still neck and neck with Gephardt in Iowa. How are you interpreting this? Is the whole show moving away from the center? Are we going to have a real kind of Donnybrook here between right and left, and never mind the centrist nuances this time?
Well, certainly the White House and the Democratic candidates are beginning to realize that this campaign is going to be different than the ones we've seen in the past. Rather than go for the elusive swing voter, soccer mom, or NASCAR dad, whatever you want to call it, the party faithful are going to be more and more important, not just in the primary, but in the actual presidential election. And that means an even more divisive race, if that's even possible. Remember the red and blue maps we saw after 2000? Well, those certainly haven't gone anywhere. So we have the Democrats going for their base, and of course George Bush is doing just the same. And just as you have anti-Bush people, I've never seen so much visceral hatred. When I was covering the White House, we'd go out. My favorite sign I'd see at these anti-Bush rallies was, "Is I king?" And there's certainly people, as your guests have been saying, who think he's illegitimate. But there are just as many people who love this man. And more Republicans are faithful to him than even to Ronald Reagan, some strategists are saying.
Well, David Yipsen, you ought to know that picture pretty well. And you know that Bill Clinton pulled it off by playing that middle so adroitly. Do you really believe in your bones that after the primary season is passed, this won't once again kind of revert to form and be a campaign for a battle for the middle?
Well, it could, and that's certainly been the history of American politics. But I agree, the game right now has been operating on the extremes. Fewer and fewer people vote in American elections, and so both parties have figured out that, gee, the way we're going to win is to mobilize our base, and so both parties are doing this. And I don't know. It will be a different sort of election if that's true, and the viciousness of it as you try to mobilize your base is going to turn off even more people in the center. Mm-hmm. I do think, I mean, it's a long way until next year, but it's ironic to me that we started this campaign by everyone saying, oh my, Bush will be very strong on defense and very weak on the economy. Well, what's happening? The economy is getting better. I mean, the stock market hit high again today.
It sure did.
People are feeling a little better, and yet Iraq all of a sudden is becoming a quagmire, is the word that's getting used. So how interesting it is that the game changes very quickly. And I think those of us in the punditry business have to be a little bit careful about predicting things, because we all have examples of people like John Kerry who were just inevitable for nominations, and then they fall apart later. And every cycle has those. And so I think it's there's a lot of water to go over the dam yet.
Jack Beatty, how about it? I mean, you saw how Bill Clinton won. You know how many elections there have been where, yes, people staked out positions for their party base in the primaries, but then it was all about the middle in the main event. Can you really see the 50-50 nation going to the polls this time and having that big ideological contest for the White House?
Well, Howard Dean becomes left only in reference to how far right Bush has taken the country. Let's recall, his economic policy is really the Steve Forbes economic policy. It was conceived by his campaign when they thought their main opposition was going to be Steve Forbes. What do we know about Steve Forbes? He's a 100%er. His tax cut plan wasn't even popular. Bush's tax cut plan wasn't even popular on Capitol Hill among Republicans during that last campaign. They were distancing himself from it. So we have an economic policy that was made by a guy that runs a magazine that basically says we don't need any government. We just need to cut all the taxes all the time. That's pretty radical, it seems to me. And then, of course, on the other side, we also have a government that seems to say, well, let's let pollution control be up to the polluters. They'll decide the best thing to do. And we have a president who took us into what everybody would concede was an optional or unnecessary war, and now in a very and increasingly unpopular occupation. So, I mean, left only can, in this case, could sort of mean the old center. It's just that all of this has moved so far with Bush, it seems to me.
Well, maybe, but it's not only Bush, obviously. I mean, Lieberman, Kerry, even Gephardt, you could say that they're all much more in the center than Dean. Let's turn to our callers. Dan's calling from Brighton, Massachusetts. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm thinking that Dean has done quite a bit to distinguish himself from the other Democratic candidates, but the groundswell really came about when he raised all that money on the Internet.
Mm-hmm. And nobody expected it. No one saw it coming.
Right. And suddenly it occurs to me that maybe Bush, with all his money, is actually rich enough to choose his opponent. Meaning,
you think that George W's been sitting up night sending in
$200 at a time? Yeah.
PayPal contributions to Howard the Dr. Dean.
Right, because what greater contrast is there between what candidate would he rather run against? The one that's presided over a liberal state, voted in gay marriages. This is the guy that he can bash in the race between the two candidates.
So you see Dean as McGovern to George Bush.
Yeah, well, yeah, and even, you know, McGovern, McCarthy, you go back to Mondale, he said, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to raise taxes, and basically his honesty was his undoing. So basically Bush would like to run against someone who tells the truth.
Well, so here's someone, Dan, you sort of twice bitten and not necessarily believing that the glow is going to last. Thanks for your call. Kevin Landrigan, how about it? How great is that risk that the enthusiasm for Dr. Dean runs him right out of where most Americans are willing to go?
Well, I think Dan makes a good point in his own way. As Martha pointed out, and we found this too, as Dave has in Iowa, that Democrats hate this president more than I've seen Democrats hate any other Republican sitting president. And because of that, therefore, there's a window of opportunity for the anybody but Dean, starting with John Kerry, which is to argue that, is it not even more important than we find an electable nominee? So let's look at some of the electable downsides of a Howard Dean nomination. No foreign policy or military experience. Anti-war candidate. I can't remember the last anti-war president. Comes from a small state that gives us, you know, great cheese and thanks to Ben and Jerry's great chunky monkey ice cream, but hasn't given us a lot of presidents. And finally, as the caller alluded to, civil unions for same-sex couples, which is an issue on which George Bush would love to run against a nominee in the South.
And he's already begun to dine out on that, saying it should be a man and a woman.
And there was the anecdote with Karl Rove plotting Howard Dean at his parade, and whether that was a stunt or it wasn't a stunt. All I know is, where do you see George Bush going right now? He goes to Iowa. He goes to Illinois. He goes to Missouri twice. He goes to Pennsylvania. He's not going to the South because he sees Kerry or Dean. Kerry, he perceives as a Massachusetts liberal and says, the Republicans still own the South against those two guys.
So who needs it? We can do it. And maybe he sees it as his McGovern. But I still, that image of him throwing dollars in the Dean war chest is quite an image. Dan, thanks for your call. Kay's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Kay. You're on the air.
Hi. I think the dream ticket in terms of meeting one's weakness with the other one's strength, mm-hmm, would be Howard Dean and General Wesley Clark together. And the Wisconsin primary has been moved up. You know, Wisconsin used to be a real player back in, you know, times of Kennedy, and now it's, I believe, the second week in February.
Mm-hmm.
And so we also are getting many more of the candidates, Dean in particular. Kucinich is more popular here in Madison, but I think that the issues in Wisconsin, particularly education, prison reform, we have a growing Hispanic population, and
put those two together, and you like what you see there.
Right, and a new Democratic governor and new mayors in Milwaukee and Madison that are both more progressive. So I think that, and health care has always been important in this state, and I think even though Dean is oh, and hunting, too, so in terms of the NRA.
And he's got that NRA endorsement. Well, let's pick it up,
right,
Kay. Thanks for your call, Martha Brandt. How about it? If you put the general in there with the anti-war doctor, do you have a winning combination? Is it going to happen?
a lot of people are speculating that General Wesley Clark's actually going for a vice presidency here, and it looks like he's really going to jump in. People keep saying it's too late, but you know, talk about internet phenomenons. He also has the Draft Wesley Clark movement and pledges of a couple million if they materialize. But I think it'd be a fascinating counterpoint. The thing I've been hearing, I was recently covering the war, and a source of mine from Central Command who just got back from the Gulf tells me that the guys on the ground, guys and gals, hate Howard Dean because by being anti-war, he's sending the message to the troops, we don't support what you're doing. So you already hear him shifting his comments about that towards the mainstream, trying to refocus on, you know, what's going on in, as they called it, phase four, the rebuilding of Iraq.
Right.
But if you had a guy like General Clark who brings, obviously, all that military heft, I think it would be actually a brilliant ticket.
David Yepsen, what about the rest of this boardwalk here? Do you see Clark coming in? Are Iowans anticipating it? And what about the others? What about Bob Graham? What about Dick Kephart? We haven't heard that much tonight. And you said, there's Lieberman, of course, with that moderate tone, and Kerry.
Well, I think I see nothing on the ground here for Bob Graham. He spent a lot of time here. I see him getting very little traction. I think the other candidates are all at this point in the game, and I think you'll see this tonight in the debate. I mean, their first task now is to slow down Howard Dean. Everybody's got their own little scenarios, but everybody has one common factor, and that is they've got to stop Dean from rolling this thing up. And so we're going to see some attacks on Dean. I think the Democratic Party is out of power. A party out of power always has a debate inside itself. Do we go to the far right or do we go to the far left for a candidate with a good, strong message, or do we go to the center for a candidate who can offer appeal to more voters? Right now, the Democratic Party wants to go to the left, and they have opted so far for Howard Dean. Now, the downside to this is that Howard Dean has not been vetted. He has not participated in a national political campaign before. I mean, John Kerry, arguably in Massachusetts, is a little rough and tumble there. I mean, he's been vetted pretty well in an urban campaign settings. Howard Dean hasn't, and so Dean is going to go under a lot of scrutiny, and we'll see how he holds up under it. And General Clark, you know, he's not a politician. He may be an outstanding general, but he's also not a hero general. He's not on the same plane that Eisenhower or Ulysses Grant or even Colin Powell are on. I mean, I understand there's a lot of buzz about Dean and Clark and all that, but my goodness, it's early, and neither of these men have really been thoroughly vetted in this process.
Does Dean come across as scrappy enough to get past the kind of pacifist thing that was thrown on George McGovern? He's got a kind of feistiness in his voice. Does that give him, you know, edgy, a tough guy credibility, even if he's got an anti-war stance, David Yepsen?
It might, but I think it's going to where he gets picked apart is on the substance of stuff. Mm-hmm. What did he do as governor? What's his position on this issue and that? He's not, you know, he's not real fluent in foreign policy. He's not had to deal with these issues. And as the light gets hotter on him, that could be that could trip him up. I mean, having a glib, harsh tone can be off-putting to a lot of people who are looking for somebody with a little solemnity in their president.
We've got it. David Yepsen, Martha Brandt, Kevin Landrigan, Jack Beatty, stand by. We're talking tonight about Democrats at the real starting line. Who's revving your engine here? Dean, Kerry, Gephardt, are you waiting for the General Clark? Join us, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Democrats at the real starting line of the presidential campaign 2004, The View from Iowa and New Hampshire. We're joined tonight by Martha Brandt of Newsweek, the Des Moines Register's David Yepsen, and from the Nashua Telegraph in Nashua, New Hampshire, Kevin Landrigan. Jack Beatty's with us as well. You can join. What do you think? Who's building the real momentum out there? Why? How are they doing it? And is this going to be a different kind of presidential contest than we have seen for a while? Are we moving away from the center and rallying around the political polls? Who does that work for? Democrats? Republicans? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Here's a television spot from Missouri Congressman Dick Gephardt that started running on Tuesday in New Hampshire and Iowa.
1993. The economy's in a tailspin. Every Republican opposes Bill Clinton's economic plan. But Democratic leader Dick Gephardt digs in and wins the fight in Congress by one vote. The result? The longest expansion ever. Millions of new jobs.
I'm Dick Gephardt. We took the political heat, but we did what was right. Now we have to get rid of the Bush tax cuts to create new jobs and guarantee health care for all. That's why I approve this message.
Gephardt on the tube in New Hampshire and Iowa. Kevin Landrigan, we know Iowa's a must-win for Gephardt. Must-win. How's he doing in the Granite State?
He's trying to become that alternative to Kerry and Dean, as they all are. And I think someone will emerge in New Hampshire, as they often do in a crowded field. In 1996, we saw that when this guy with a red and black shirt, Lamar Alexander, came in a very close third and almost really contended for the nomination. And I think someone will emerge from the pack of candidates that include Dick Gephardt, John Edwards, Joe Lieberman right now behind those top two. If the polls actually show that Gephardt's support is small, he's in the single digits or he sometimes breaks into 10 or 11%, but his level of commitment among his supporters is very strong. And I think that's a reflection of having run before in 88. He does have that sort of lunch bucket and some conservative Democratic supporters in the urban cities in New Hampshire that are still holding up for him.
And Martha Brandt, what about that union support for Gephardt? You kind of assume that Dick Gephardt will have the unions, and yet there's a little ruffle of uncertainty out there about that.
Yeah, it's surprising. He hasn't been able to lock it up, and it was fascinating at the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Committee meeting a few weeks ago, and Joe Lieberman was the only one who wasn't pandering to the unions. Union membership's gone down, Tom, as you know, but they vote as a block, and it's a powerful block, and they're able to motivate their people, and so it's still very important, especially in this kind of race. And, they were warming up to Kerry. They've been warming up to lots of people, so it'll be fascinating to see in the next couple weeks.
Still a little bit on the fence. Juan's calling from Nashua, New Hampshire. Hi, Juan. You're on the air.
Fine. How are you? Great. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My only concern, I guess my concern, not my issue, is that the Democratic constituency, I think, tends to think of this race as either an economic one or a foreign policy one.
Yeah.
And
what do you see?
If the economy is something that is not so much a political product, but more a result of whether manufacturing is taking place or whether finances is rolling around the world in a certain way or not.
Well, maybe so, but George Bush is going to take the credit or the blame for that, presumably to some large extent. Who's pulling your strings here, Juan, among the Democrats?
Well, I'm waiting for the good general to decide whether he's going to be in or not. If he's not, Howard Dean, if he is in, it's going to be a much closer debate on whether, the foreign policy issues and the decisions that have been made by this administration in the past and whether they have misled the country in misinforming them just to get their way is going to be the issue.
And why Wesley Clark? I mean, we know he's got this incredible resume, first in his class at West Point, Rhodes Scholar, NATO chief, but what is it that makes him appeal to you?
I see him as a straight shooter. I mean, he is, he does have a straight military background, but I think his viewpoints on the decisions that were made concerning Iraq were far different from anything that was coming out of the White House.
Mm. Straight shooter, that reputation is working for him, and we've heard it in conversations with him on this show. Juan, thanks for your call. Jill's calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Jill. You're on the air.
Hi. I like John Edwards, and I wish he was getting a little bit more traction, but it doesn't seem to be happening for him. I like him because I think that he's really speaking to something that I see, which is a growing distance between those who have and those who don't have. And I think he addresses this really well, so that middle America can kind of identify with that battle between, the wealthy and the middle class.
So why do you think he's not having more traction, Jill?
I don't know. I mean, doesn't he have, like, a ton of money? And I really don't understand that. He doesn't seem to get on any of the major news shows at all. They're always talking about Dean and what's Kerry going to do. I think that might be part of it.
And yet he was on with Tim Russert, and it didn't go so well. Let's ask our guest, Jill. Thanks for your call. David Gibson, how about it? What about John Edwards? How's he been on the stump in Iowa? And he does have a pile of money. Does he have the most of any of the Democratic candidates? Why isn't he doing better?
Well, you've got to have money. You've got to have staff. You've got to spend a lot of time in states like Iowa and New Hampshire. And Edwards has all that. You've also got to have a message. And I think John Edwards was after that bad performance with Tim Russert. He really hit a bad patch in his campaign where it really wasn't clear what he was for. I think the war set him back, as it did other candidates who voted for it and for the Patriot Act, set him back with a lot of the activists who will decide this nomination. And so, you know, Edwards is instructive for Dean. I mean, John Edwards was everyone's great hope in the Democratic Party, many people, early on. He was young, fresh face, and he lost that very quickly. And that could happen to Howard Dean before this thing is over, and somebody like John Edwards could get it back. I just think Edwards, you know, has not had a good message that has resonated with people in a unique way. And so people have kind of moved to other candidates instead of him.
And the rich-poor theme, the rich-poor theme that our caller Jill brought up, this rich-poor theme, David Yepsen, does that play in Iowa?
What, the class?
The income gap, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that has a particular appeal in the Democratic Party. You know, this economic recovery, if it is a recovery, is different than other ones. It's called the jobless recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And so the numbers may look good, but I'll tell you, the average people that I talk to, people are still worried about their jobs. And you know, that anxiety is fertile ground for the Democratic message, including the one that a guy like John Edwards offers.
Mm-hmm. Including in Iowa. Eli is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Eli. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to put my two cents in as a Dean supporter and give some insight from the point of view of someone who is a Dean supporter, because I hear a lot of analysts talk about Dean and try to put especially labels on his supporters and who they are.
Have you been out there, Eli, in the world of Dean support? Have you been at the meetups that he has mounted?
I have. I've been twice, and there's all these events. There's Dean coffee Sundays. There's Dean house parties. There's all these things you go to, and you like meet all these people, and none of them resemble even remotely the kind of left-wing radical fringe activists. I mean, your guest just used the word activist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an activist. I'm a dad, a lower middle class dad of two, you know, young boys. I've never been to a rally. I vote, but that's about it. And, you know, he got my attention with the war thing in March, I'll admit.
Yep.
But only in a passive way. I said, okay, I'll keep my eye on this guy. But it was when the centrist Democrats, I started reading what these guys like Al Fromm and Evan Bayh and Joe Lieberman were saying about he's unelectable and he's going to lead us into the wilderness. You know, the height of arrogance. Who are they to say, you know, who's electable or not, you know? I mean, we'll be the judge of that, the voters. I just felt like the establishment in the Democratic Party had already picked who was, you know, what the themes were going to be, who the candidate was going to be, and there's nobody in the Democratic Party representing, you know, middle-class, suburban kind of Democrats like me.
Like you, Eli, we've got it loud and clear, and thanks for your call. Jack Beatty, there seems to be a perfect example of the voter that you were describing earlier, who wants that, wants it hot and wants it a little bit angry.
Yes, but he told us something else there. He said that the people that were Dean supporters were not, left-wing radicals. And this is partly the crisis in American journalism, I think, the term left and right, and this the way a candidate who was a very moderate, if not conservative, Kevin would know more than I do about this, but people I talk to in Vermont say this guy was a very conservative governor here. He balanced the budget.
Pose.
He had tax cuts all the time. It's true he was a little tough on business regulation because the environment is so important up here. But, I mean, this is no raving left-winger. And his policy, you know, he's not – compare his health plan to Gephardt. Gephardt is shooting the whole ball of wax on this health plan of his. And Dean is not going that whole hog. He's more moderate there. He's also had experience with running things. And he's the only governor in this field. Americans are partial to electing governors. And they see governors not as ideologues but as practical problem solvers.
Martha Brandt, how about it? Is it possible that after all these years and all these elections, the old left-right labels just don't have legs anymore, that Americans are kind of over all those phobias, whatever they were, and are ready to look at this with a fresh perspective?
Well, I think they're also over the bickering in politics, and that may be one way in which, you know, Dean's going to have to cool down when it gets closer to the main election. And that's something to watch tonight in this first debate.
Yes.
He has a temper, and he's going to have to control it. It works to some extent you know, as we heard the Eli, you know, liking that anger, and even other candidates are copying that anger. But he has to seem presidential and calm and cool and collected at some point, and that's going to be interesting to watch. Does he get baited too easily by the other candidates or not?
Mm.
And, you know, as Jack was pointing out, he may be able to do the perfect kind of bait, subtle bait and switch, where he can play to, you know, a more left-leaning base. And then, as he points out, he is pretty moderate. On the gay union issue, for example, he wasn't a champion of this. He just kind of went along. He's fiscally conservative. The guy's from Park Avenue.
So he's got a lot to pull out of the more conservative side of the closet once things get going here. Mary's calling from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Good evening.
I just wanted to say that I heard Jim Carrey's announcement yesterday.
John Kerry, that would be, yeah.
I know another Jim.
Yeah, we all do.
Sorry.
How did it sound to you? Did he move you with his formal announcement of candidacy?
He sounded so much like a cut-out cookie politician that I almost had to turn it off. And I very much like the edge in the voice of Dean that you've been speaking about, someone another listener spoke about. And I would much rather have especially a Democrat candidate with an edge in his voice than somebody who sounded like a cookie-cutter politician.
Did you come to John Kerry yesterday with an open mind, Mary? Were you ready to hear a potential candidate that might be for you and just didn't find it there?
Well, I must admit, I'm already a Dean supporter. I lived in Vermont and New Hampshire for quite a while, and I think he's a very good man. But if he could have moved me, I would have listened, but he certainly didn't.
It just wasn't there. Yeah, Mary, thank you for your call. Kevin Landrigan, what do you make of that? John Kerry, he needs New Hampshire, your state. And he came out and he said, Bush is a radical. He's got, of course, a big war record, and he said, this isn't what I joined the Navy to fight for, not George Bush's America. And yet Mary's saying, well, it didn't resonate with her.
It's Kerry's biggest problem here, which is he seems like a candidate straight out of central casting to be president, but that's not what people vote for. They vote for someone living, breathing, who makes them happy at times, may even make them angry about a particular issue, but gives off emotion, inspires them in some way, and certainly Howard Dean does that. I mean, in the interest of full disclosure, in my past life, I covered politics on Beacon Hill when Mike Dukakis was governor, and
in Boston.
In Boston when John Kerry was lieutenant governor. I've seen John Kerry a lot better hand-to-hand campaigner than he is in this presidential campaign. And I'm waiting for that John Kerry who turned, for example, back in 1978, turned a congressman, a nice guy, Democratic congressman, endorsed by the Boston Globe named Jim Shannon, into complete roadkill in that campaign. Because he had that killer instinct. He obviously did that when he became the underdog against Bill Weld in his fight for re-election.
He's done it when the chips were down, but we haven't seen it this time. David Yepsen, time's very short, but last word goes to you. What about Kerry in Iowa?
One of John Kerry's biggest problems here is his Massachusetts background. You talk to activist Democrats who show up at caucuses. They're worried about another Mike Dukakis. They're worried about another Ted Kennedy. Democrats did not have a lot of success with those candidates, and it's a real liability for John Kerry.
Not working for him. Wow, it's been a great conversation. David Yepsen with the Des Moines Register, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
And Kevin Landrigan in Concord, New Hampshire with the Nashua Telegraph. Kevin, thanks for being with us.
Enjoyed it, Tom. Thank you.
Martha Brandt, I hope we can keep up through the campaign. It was great to have you tonight. Thanks a lot for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Martha Brandt, national correspondent for Newsweek magazine. Jack Beatty, we've got just time for another word from you in New Hampshire there.
Well, I'll say they're off.
And they are.
In Albuquerque.
In Albuquerque.
But we're not going to listen to that until 9 o'clock.
Yeah. We'll catch up with that later, much later. Jack, thanks for being with us.
All right. Bye.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Support.